Mate, I haven't fucking spoken to anyone in about a year, so I've forgotten how to speak in a public situation, yeah. Turned into a fucking weirdo.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
As you know from the intro you've just heard that I forget about every week, you are listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and my good friend Morgan Richards.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards. And while I still worry about the weather, we're about to head back to youth in retrospect over the last 10 years.
See, the thing is with our, it's so wordy that people are going to go, has he lost his mind? Like, rather than it being song titles. But yes, if you're new to this podcast, that was Morgan doing puns based on this week's guest. And this week's guest on episode 154 is the absolutely beautiful voiced, beautiful faced, and beautiful souled James Vec Gilodi of Def Havana.
Yes, but not only that, this is a very special edition of Sapnin Podcast because this week marks a 10th year anniversary of the release of Def Havana's second full-length and breakthrough record, Fools and Worthless Liars. On November the 7th, 2011, it saw the band's career change, cementing themselves as one of the best storytelling artists around and shaping the next chapters of their careers for the last decade. And as someone who grew up in that famous 2010s UK art scene, I've met so many people who have connected with this record, including myself, so had to invite James on to help celebrate and reminisce it. And I'm sure it's quite a cool experience for you, Sean, because being around James and Def Havana a lot around that time, you've seen them grow for many years into the band they've become today.
Yes, it was an amazing time back then, but the fact that we are reminiscing 10 years later makes me feel like an ancient bitch. But yes, it was amazing at the time. This was their change of sound, I guess. This was the end of their screamo post-hardcore sounds, and when they went a bit more, how do we describe it? Emo, rock, folk. They just flipped the whole fucking script. And, as you're about to hear, it was a mad time for them. And, it was always amazing to watch them grow. They absolutely smashed it with that album. And I am fucking Christmas happy that we managed to get James for this episode, because the stories he tells and some of the information he now tells us about how he is and what he's doing makes my fucking heart glow. Glad to see him fucking doing well and laughing and I love him. I love them.
Yes, and in this episode we're going to dissect everything about Fools and Worthless Liars, from their jumping sound to the hangover of Friends Like These to famous sarcastic lyrics, the legacy of some of their fan favourites, wild touring experiences from this cycle, and even a little guest appearance from his dog, and a really, really personal update on James's life. So it's all going on. There's so much detail in this episode. If you're a Deaf Ivana fan, I think this is going to mean a little bit extra to you. And if you're not, you're about to experience some even more stories behind a wonderful, wonderful band.
Yes. Thank you very much to James for coming on. I went directly to him to ask him to do this. And he said yes, but I had to find his number first because he's changed his number and stuff since. So I was like, oh, here we go, is it? I thought he just got rid of it, or he might have blocked me. But then I had my brother on the case and he couldn't get over him and a couple of other people. So yeah, it was good to get James on. It was fucking great to see him. I hope I get to see him in the flesh soon because I would love to give him a massive, massive big hug. But yes, there's a lot of news and secrets and facts about Fools and Worthless Liars and what is next for the guys as well. So, yes, if you're a Deaf Ivana fan, you're going to love this. If you're not a Deaf Ivana fan, this is a very, very funny conversation and heartfelt conversation and at some point sad conversation as well. So, I think we've managed nearly every emotion in this in this one.
For the listeners at home, write down all the emotions you go through during this episode. Yeah, and then send us a message at SapninPod on Twitter and Instagram.
You have turned into the fucking Segway King. Yes. Get in touch with us on Twitter and Instagram at SapninPod. That's at SapninPod. At SapninPod, please. Yes, very clever that was, Morg. I like that.
I was very, very proud of that. But also make sure to go and check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/sapnin. If you've listened to this a lot, you obviously heard us talking about it before, but we need to keep mentioning it because it means the absolute world and helps us more than we can ever put into words. So if you want to experience our wonderful Patreon community of amazing people getting together, going to gigs, organizing things, and just some bonus content in between from us two schmucks, patreon.com/sapnin is the best place to be and the best way to support us.
Yes, good use of schmucks it as well. Morg, I like that. Yes, as he said, patreon.com/sapnin. It keeps this fucking podcast going. So, yes, thank you very much.
So, without any further ado, let's go straight into this wonderful conversation with the awesome human that is James from Deaf Ivana. Fools and Worthless Liars, 10 years old, and we're about to celebrate it in style.
James, I love you. Thank you very much. Sapnin!
Sapnin!
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Sapnin!
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 Yes! There it is, and with a slight Welsh tinge as well. I like that very, very much.
Always.
This week's guest is the absolutely beautiful James Vec Galodi of Deaf Havana and just being himself fame. How are you, James?
I'm all right, thanks, mate. I'm all right. I mean, as good as I can be. Still fucking trying to navigate what's going on in the world, but I'm all right.
Yeah, it's been a mental, it's been a mental 18 months, 2 years, really, haven't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're all right, I think. Well, I can't talk for Morgan. Morgan, how are you?
Yeah, well, we're keeping busy. We're trying to do this podcast thing. But, man, James, really appreciate you coming back on the podcast. It's been a while.
No worries.
As you said, it's been a crazy 18 months and whatnot. But you've been very quiet online, really, on social media and all that kind of stuff as well. So how have you been over this time, really?
I've been pretty good. Well, started off very bad, and now I'm pretty good. I haven't been on social. I don't have social media anymore. I've literally just been hiding away, to be honest. But I stopped drinking 7 months ago, which is really good for me anyway. Because
congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Massive congrats. Yeah.
Thank you. I mean, it's been a long time coming because you know what I'm fucking like normally, but it just reached a point where it was like, okay, you're either going to die and ruin every relationship and just connection you have in life, or you can do this. So yeah, it's pretty, that's been the biggest thing for me. But yeah, I think in terms of like health, it's been a big thing. So I'm pretty good.
Nice.
I'm bored of this shit now. I'm bored of not being able to do what I want. I mean, it's getting better, isn't it? But who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah. Fingers crossed getting better. Well, yeah, no, touching on that. Sorry to bring it up, but was it a moment where you were like, right, this has gone too far with the drinking? Like, were you naked in the street? Were you, being sick in a bucket?
I've done all of those things many times.
We all have.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's just part and parcel of being on tour in a band, isn't it? But I don't know. There was loads of shit, really. Like, just before COVID, I got the worst I'd ever been. Like, I was just doing shitloads of drugs, which I've been doing over the years anyway. Like, it's not a secret. That's one thing I've never really tried to hide, the fact that I just, anything anyone gives me, I'll just shove it in my mouth and whatever, see what happens. But so the end of 2019 was really bad. And like, I was falling out with people, falling out with everyone really. Like, it got really bad. Then I sort of managed to get a little bit better. And then over Christmas, not just gone, but the last Christmas, and then the start of this year, I think because I was actively trying before that to rein it in a bit, I just was like, fuck it. And I just went mental. And yeah, it just got to the point where I was blacking out after like four or five drinks. Like, it didn't take anything anymore. I was just shutting my brain off and I loved it. And it was just like, I could just, everything was just falling apart. And it has been for years. But when you're constantly on tour and you're away from your like wife and stuff, you can kind of hide it because they don't see them. As long as you sort of behave when you're at home and you kind of pretend like you're not that bad. When you're away, you can do what you fucking want. Like, it doesn't matter if you don't, if your phone, like, you just say, going on stage now, speak to you tomorrow. And then that gives you from, I don't know, 8 p.m. until whenever the next day to just do what you want. And that's normal. So you can kind of hide it. But it was just getting to the point where I was like shaking. I mean, I'm surprised I haven't actually been for a health checkup, but I'm surprised like nothing happened. Cause I was like probably 10 years of going hard every day. But yeah, I just sort of reached a point where everything, I could just see everything falling apart, and loads of stuff already had fallen apart. So I managed to get like, the way I managed to do it was through AA, because I couldn't do it on my own. Like, there's no way. You give me a choice between drinking and not drinking, and I'm always going to choose drinking. But if there's some other people like being like, okay, before you do that, give me a ring and I might be able to dissuade you from doing it. So yeah, that worked for me. And it's pretty boring, I'm not going to lie, because I've seen the light. I know how fun it can be to be fucked all the time. So it's kind of, the days are long and you have to fill them. I mean, you guys know probably. But yeah, I don't want to talk about myself too much, but that's for the majority of this year, that's mainly what I've been focusing on, because it's took a bit of an effort.
You say you don't want to talk. You say you don't want to talk about yourself, but like, if there's somebody listening now who's literally going through that same thing,
yeah,
they're going to hear this, and God knows that you are a hero to so many people. whether you like it or not. And yeah, this could be a big moment for them. So yeah, no, it's amazing to hear. It's amazing to hear, and especially you know that you were brave enough to get help as well. Because yeah, there's been times when I've been a bit lost, and I've been like, oh, I don't know if I could do help or whatever. But yeah. Fair play to you. That's amazing, yeah. Brother. That's all, honestly, genuinely fucking. It's made me really happy, actually.
But, yeah. Thank you very much.
Is there anything else you've been using to kind of fill those days? Well, like
heroin.
The alcohol's under control, but I've got a terrible heroin habit. No, just trying to keep. I don't know, like avoiding certain situations. So like, it's obvious, isn't it? Like I'm 7 months in now, so I'm a bit better. I'm a bit more like I can kind of deal with. It's still hard. Like I still like. Every time my missus has a glass of wine or something, like I do want to grab it and drink it. That's probably never going to go away. But I just now have the ability to stop and be like, before all I would do was just think about that exact moment then and think this is going to make me feel good. But now I have the ability to stop and think, how's that going to affect me in 12 hours? How's it going to affect me in 2 weeks? You know? So yeah, that's the main thing. But in terms of like, I'm just trying to keep a little bit busy, just even if it's like I started boxing. I've got a dog, so I just look after him loads.
Yeah,
like, it's like a child.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Well, yeah, no, I was going to say, you're looking better, you're looking trim, and I see you've got a full reptile top on, so I thought there's some sort of MMA sort of fighting coming out. So how's the boxing going?
It's good, man. It's good fun. It's
nice. Good, anybody, you going to challenge anybody in the rock world to a fight?
Look, let me get a bit more practice under my belt, and then I'll do it.
Right, if you need a manager, I'm on it.
All right, fuck yeah.
Oh, starting wars already. But no, man, it's really nice to see how happy you are and healthy and that you've been dealing with all that. But let's get to the reason why we're here and why we wanted to do this episode, because this week actually marks the 10th year anniversary of your record, Fools and Worthless Liars. So on the 7th of November 2011, you released your second studio album. And for me, I think a record that really shaped the band's kind of career and everything going forward. We're going to dissect so many elements of this record in particular. But just to start, what's some of your earliest memories getting into that cycle, that time period, and just getting that album out?
The main thing for me was how uncomfortable I felt. Because like you guys know, because you've been like, we've been mates for ages, and I'm sure you're aware of what we were doing before that. You remember like Ryan used to scream in our band. I never used to be the front man. I never wanted to be. I still am a reluctant front man. Like my first love was guitar, and I just wanted to be like John Frusciante from Red Hot Chili Peppers. Just hang back, let some arrogant cunt be the front man, and I'll be the secretly talented one in the background.
That's the complete opposite of how I went to being in a band. I was like, I'm the arrogant fuck with no talent. Is there any chance I can get five people who can just go, quick, you guys, do impressive noise, and I'll just yell and have people look at me?
If you're ever
like, do you know what, I want to take a step back and let an arrogant cunt turn up.
There we go.
I'm ready whenever.
Look, Glassjaw covers band. Let's do
I am in. I am sold. Well, I'm kind of in one of them at the moment as it is, but they're not straight covers at the moment. But yeah, sorry, I derailed you.
No, it's all good. But yeah, I remember the main thing was just feeling uncomfortable because I'd never been... I think we'd only played a few shows. Oh no, we had played. I think we did one tour without the album being out. I mean, like one headline tour as me as a front man. And it was weird because like, people came to see us, but they didn't really, they all just wanted like the scream. They wanted Friends Like These and all that stuff. And like, we played those songs because we only had like one song, which I'd written, but it was weird because I had to like reimagine all the songs. And it was, I don't know. I just remember it being, I watched a video not too long ago from that tour. And there's like, I didn't know what to say in between songs. Like on stage, I was like, I just kept going like, anyway, like I just didn't know what to do. It was weird. So the main thing around then was just like trying to figure out how to do it and what to do. Cause I just had no fucking idea. At that time, I'd just moved to London. I was living in a, Oh, no, hang on. When was it? 2011. I'd lived in London for a couple of years. But I was living in like a flat with my girlfriend at the time in North London. I wrote all those songs for that, just like, I don't know, just in and around the flat. Like, I don't even think I had a phone that was capable of recording voice notes. So I think I was just memorizing it. I didn't have a computer. I didn't have any way to record demos. And then I remember like me and Tom Ogden went and stayed at my grandparents' house for like 5 days and just wrote a couple of songs, and he could sort of record. So we just had like shit demos of them. But it was just, I was 20 when we wrote it and recorded it. And like, I just didn't have any expectations really. Like it was just fun. It was just, although it was daunting trying like going in and being a front man, even though I didn't know how far it would go at that point, it was kind of just like, we were just like, meh, whatever. If this happens, it happens. There was no like, we almost got another singer. We were, because I love heavy music. Like I said, I don't want to be the front man. I wanted it to be a punk band. I wanted it to keep going and be like a, I don't know, Every Time I Die covers band, like rip off, you know what I mean? But we were this close to get, like, we took promo photos with our friend Max, who filled in for a while. We took promo photos with him and stuff, and we were like, this is it. This is going to be the band. And then the last minute decision, we were like, should we try and actually make a career out of this? And maybe, like, we were like, maybe people won't like screaming in 5 years' time, but I'm pretty sure there's still, like, songs that are sung on acoustic guitar. So we just kind of, it was a little bit of a conscious decision, but we were also caught up and drunk and just didn't really care that much. It was just, I don't know. That was a really long-winded way of me saying the main thing I remember is just feeling a bit like, I have no idea what I'm doing.
Yeah. But it must have been such a weird period of the band's lifespan at that time, because those two records do have a massive departure. As you said, you've gone from doing that kind of two vocalist post-hardcore thing that was very popular in the early 2010s and all that to kind of a more melodic storytelling acoustic bass kind of band. So from that, did it feel like starting fresh? Did you feel that having already done an album cycle before that, you could kind of carry on from that? Like mindset wise, where were you?
So mindset wise, I think I wanted it to feel like it was fresh, because I was like, we can start again. We should have just changed the name. There's been so many points in this band where we should have changed the name, because it was just a, because obviously with when you've already established something that has its own identity, if you keep that name, people are always going to associate it with what it was before. So we should have just changed the name, because although it did feel like a new project, I guess, there were still people every night just standing there. And then as soon as we played Friends Like These, they were like, so it was like people still just, it wasn't many people because like hardly anyone was coming to see us back then, but it was, well, and now, to be honest, but it was kind of, yeah, it was. I just remember feeling, it was just disheartening sometimes, because people still wanted to see us as that heavy band. And the first track on Fools is an acoustic song, which we were playing live, and they were like, what the fuck is this? And looking back on it now, like it was quite a departure. Because in my head, everything always makes sense. The one thing we've always got is every album sounds different. And in my head, it all makes sense, because there's a transition period that no one else sees, where I'm like, I explain it to myself. But to go between like Friends Like These and heavier songs to the past 6 years is a bit weird. But I don't know. I guess we didn't really think about it properly.
No,
has been the case for everything.
No, I get the disheartening bit where you have just kids just wanting old songs, but that's a test. Yes, and it's a testament to like when they fell in love with you as well, I guess. It's like, it sends, because for years I was like, fuck this shit, we're not playing any The Blackout's not playing any old songs. You go, fuck it. Like, people were asking for, like, there's an old song called Go Burn City Hall, which is literally just, we had bits that were in the same key and we were like, put them together, that's a fucking song. Yeah. And people were like, that's really good. And if you listen to it now, it's fucking dreadful. But for some reason, people fucking love it because it reminds them of like when they found it or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
And just sometimes, I completely get the disheart. Like when you're looking out on stage and you're like, yes, here's a new song. And they're like, ha-ha, but I want the old crapper stuff that you didn't spend as long working on. You bastards.
Fucking hell.
The crowd came with you, though. I think they did make that transition with you. And then you, yeah, well, after that, I think after this record, you got bigger than ever. I did. It was off the back of this, I think, wasn't it?
I think it must have been off that the back of that, because, like, I don't know, maybe if we'd have kept going down the route we were going, we probably would have, well, I don't know, like, we probably would have, I know I would have got bored fairly quickly after that, so I don't think we would have continued under this name or doing that kind of music, because I would have, I'd have probably had one more album like that in me before I was like, I kind of don't like Every Time I Die anymore. That was a phase. But I don't know, like, it was definitely the start. It was the thing that got a lot of people into our band.
Yeah. Have you heard the new latest Every Time I Die record, though?
No, but everyone says it's good.
It's called Radical, and they've named it Spot On. So, fairly tough.
I do still like Every Time I Die. I didn't good. Go off.
just in case Keith is listening, because he's a massive fan of Sapling. He's got a big tattoo across his back, apparently, so... Sorry about that, Keith. We all love you.
But it's interesting you talked about that kind of struggle, because I really wanted to get into kind of some of the lyrical themes of this record as well. Because for me, and I think what connected a lot of listeners to these songs, is you kind of had this kind of sarcastic approach to a lot of things and opening up more about storytelling and looking at kind of your youth and nostalgia and stuff like that. So could you really just tell us when... getting down to write the lyrics, was it a kind of you not really caring what too much if anyone's offended by what you're saying, or was it just trying to get all your thoughts out there? I mean, as you said, you were still pretty young at the time.
Well, it was a lot of it was I didn't really, it's not that I didn't care what anyone thought, I just didn't think about it. I was just writing what came to my head. Like, you gotta understand, I spent my entire life growing up in the middle of nowhere. Like, I moved around loads when I was a kid, and then we settled in Norfolk of all places when I was like 11. And I'd never lived in a village, let alone a city. And then when I was 19, I moved to London, and it just gave me like, I just developed horrendous anxiety, which I probably already had. I just didn't realize. So the main record is a lot of the record is about that. Like, a lot of it's about like hating London, I guess, and just feeling stuck and trapped. But yeah, I definitely, it wasn't that I was like, fuck everyone, I don't care what they think. It was more like I just didn't even, I'd only ever written one song lyrically, I think, before that we'd used, which was, I think it's called Another Day in This House on that previous album. That was the only one I'd ever written lyrically, because I used to do the music, Ryan used to do the lyrics. So I didn't really know what I was doing. I was just writing, like, I had this little shitty book. I was just writing, like, I just thought they were like poems. They weren't really, I didn't really have an idea as to where they were going, but they just, I don't know, it kind of happened pretty, like, I had the lyrics before I had the music a lot of the time.
Well, when did you realize through the recording process that you were like, oh, this is cool, this might work? Did that, did you ever get that?
I can't really remember. I think, so we recorded it with our mate Matt O'Grady, and like, we just slept on his floor in his little studio. It was so like budget. We didn't really, it was just quite last minute. And it was only me and Tom. Like, Chris and Lee never came to the studio because they had full-time jobs at the time. So the whole thing is me and Tom. We never played any of the songs live. We never rehearsed any of the songs as a band. So it was just like, I'd be playing guitar and singing, and Tom would just be playing the drums in another room to that. So we were kind of, it was so like just bodge, I guess. Like, although it was recorded like properly, like Matt has a good, like, he's an actual engineer.
Yeah.
The way we did it was so just like we didn't even know, we made everything up as we went along. Like, we didn't have set out parts. I had chords and vocals. That was it. Everything else we just made up.
Wow.
And then, like, so we thought we'd finished the album. And then in the period between, like, getting all the stuff sorted and finishing recording, sorry, the other way around, finishing recording and getting it all sorted, I wrote Hunt, Stanton and Pier and Anemophobia, which are, like, two of the best songs on there, I think, or two of my favourite songs on there. And I was like, shit, we need to put these on the album. And I didn't have demo. So I just had, they were just in my head. So I had to explain to Tom how to play the drums before he'd ever heard anything. So, like, I remember him, we just picked a tempo and he knew, and he wrote on a bit of paper like the structure of the song. And I was like sitting through a glass wall, air drumming the drums, and he was basically just copying me. And then after a while, he got it, and like, but it was so backwards. Like it was, so, and we, I swear, we recorded the drums to those two songs in like a school. Like, it was so fucking weird. It was so weird. It was just all just, we just didn't really, we were quite young. We didn't really know what we were doing. And we were like, fuck it, let's just, we was up for anything at that point.
Did Matt have any say in it, or was he just basically a great engineer?
No, he definitely, Matt helps a lot. Like he played guitar on some of the songs.
Oh, nice.
Mainly because I can be bothered. while I was going to the pub. But yeah, I haven't spoken to him in years, but him and I were really close back then. And we used to, so he had quite a lot to do with it. He, not in terms of like lyrics and stuff, but he definitely helps with melodies and a lot of the harmonies and stuff he works out. So it was pretty combined effort.
Nice. Yeah, he was, because he was working in Outhoust for years, wasn't he, with John Mitchell.
Yeah, John Mitchell, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope he's all right. Yeah, I haven't spoken to Matt for a while.
I think he's all right. I know Tom keeps in touch with him, I think.
Nice. I'm going to write his name down.
But but speaking of those kind of tracks in particular, I think there's a lot from this record that kind of became a staple for Def Ivana's set list to come for years. And even if you played somewhere and there's one of these songs weren't on the set list, you get someone complaining about it, as is the life as a band with loads of albums. But especially that kind of I'm a Bore, this past 6 years, Pia, everything you mentioned, and those lyrics of kind of like worried about the weather, wishing you were Kurt Cobain or Morrissey, those have always been kind of connected to the band for ages, and I think that gets referenced a lot from your fan base. Is there any of those lines in particular that come out, that come to mind when you think about that, or any you've noticed that really resonated with people a bit more?
I think just as a whole, Anemophobia is the one that just everyone always comes back to, and like, I think because it is pure, I wrote that song after playing Slam Dunk one year. I mean, it must have been the year that we were writing the record, and it was probably the first really bad hangover come down that I had, because it lasted like a week. I thought I was going to die. So I just wrote that song is just probably the first thing I wrote about pure anxiety and depression. And I guess it just, because it's so, I didn't vet it. I didn't like go back and think maybe I shouldn't say that. I just fucking did it. And the vocals on the record, that's the first time I ever sang it out loud. I never sang it. I just wrote it like on a bit of paper to an acoustic guitar, and I probably sang it like, what are you about? Like just to myself in a flat with neighbours and people living in the flat, so I couldn't be loud. And we kept, like I say, 95% of the vocals from the first take are that take.
Awesome.
Because I was fucked as well at the time. Like I couldn't sing or do anything. Like I had no energy, I was dead. And so we literally did like one or two takes, and that's it. So that's the first. So I think you can hear like how it's like desperation, really, because it sounds pathetic and like over the top at the moment, like when I think back on it. But at that time, I was like, I think I'm going to die. That was the first time I genuinely believed I was going to die. So I think it just sounds desperate. And a lot of people relate to that, because I guess it's just raw, isn't it? I hate that term, but it is just, it's just honesty.
Well, yeah. It's something the majority of us have all been through, is like the fucking, you know, anxiety. We've all been in awful fucking places. And yeah, it's just, it'll just resonate with people. And it very much did. And it's probably, yeah, it still does to this day with a lot of people, I'd imagine.
Well, yeah, we have a lot of diehard Def Ivana fans in our Patreon community. And they always mention these kind of songs in particular. So it must be so nice to see that even 10 years after writing these as a young kid, really, that people are still connecting to them to this day.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Like, that's why over the years we've... Sorry, can you hear my dog scratching at the door? I'll let him in.
Oh, I was hoping you had a new... You had a new metal DJ demoing in the background. That's what I thought it was. I was like, oh, this new Def Ivana stuff.
I wish. That's why we've done, like, particularly that song, we've done a few different versions of it over the years, just so we can always include. I think we've only played a couple of tours where we didn't play it. So just to save us from getting bored and hating it, we've done a few different versions. over the years. So yeah, it's pretty cool that people still, I mean, even I still resonate. I don't necessarily like the song on record. Like I don't, cause it was rushed. I don't think that's the best way it could have. That's not the best. It could have ended up as a better song. Like maybe
right.
It's just a bit weird. It's a bit like some of the drums are a bit crap. Like my writing of the drums are a bit crap. I don't know. Just it could have been better. It could have had more emotion behind it, but I think it did what it was supposed to do.
Nice. Well, have you ever, have you ever written a song and you're like, cause I know how you feel about stuff like that. Like I can't listen back to pretty much any recording of my voices on.
I'm exactly.
Like, oh,
yeah, same.
This shit. thanks, James. Oh, no, you were on about US. All right.
I was on about me.
No, you're right, Sean. That. You shouldn't listen back. It's fucking
I would never say that.
Yeah. Is there a song in the Death of Anna catalogue that you're 100% happy with and wouldn't change a single thing about?
Oh, fuck me.
Because I don't know if that's the case for any for most artists. I can't believe I said artists for a start.
Just in general or off that record?
Both.
Yeah,
both.
Yeah, in general, I guess. Because like I've never been happy with a song that we've put out, and I always feel like, oh, I could have gone in and added something or taken something out. Or yeah. So have you ever think you've got a complete finished one? I guess what's the most proudest song or the most proud you've been of one of your songs, I guess, is probably a better version of that fucking question.
I love the last track on Old Souls, Carapadre. I love that. But I don't think it's recorded perfectly. Like, I think we could have done it differently. But I love that song. Off Fools and Earth is Liars. I quite like Handstand Appeal. I mean, it's a bit cheesy. Handstand Up Here does something to me that the other songs don't. I think it's because it's just really nostalgic for me. I guess for anyone that listens to it and connects with it. I think, I mean, obviously, I hate listening to my own voice and I hate the recording could be better and just everything could be better. But I think in terms of a song, like I like Handstand Up Here lyrically and stuff.
Yeah. So there are many other people, but with Fools, it starts with obviously this past 6 years, and I think that has become such a cult classic song for Death of Anna fans over the years as well. But speaking of those kind of lyric reference we've mentioned, I did want to bring up the one line that kind of refers to kind of maybe jealousy or frustration at the time to the guys from Lord Atlantis and Young Guns, who were doing a lot of things, and you were kind of just behind them. Obviously, it's ironic that this album then got you to be at that same level and those places and touring, doing all these amazing things. But at the time, what was the reaction for that line in particular? Did you have to explain it to the guys? Was there any kind of weird thing online, people trying to work out who you're actually on about?
I can't really remember, but I remember talking to the guys that I referenced because they were like our two best. They might have been the only bands that we properly toured with at the time, like Young Guns, and they still are good friends of mine. Young Guns and Lord Atlantis were the two people that we were friends with. And they seemed to, it was just that point where everything, I can't remember what was happening, but I think Young Guns were getting like good tours. And back then, like if you got main stage Reading and Leeds, we were like, what the fuck? Like if someone we knew got that. And I remember Young Guns got that. They had a song on Radio 1. They'd already been to America. Lord Atlantis had a song on Radio 1 pretty much every day. Can't even remember what song it was, but I was just like, fuck. I've always been fairly like bitter and jealous, and I'm not very good at showing appreciation to other people that get stuff that I don't. I just feel like I've got like low self-worth, high ego. So I think I deserve stuff, but I fucking hate myself. So
it's
pretty weird.
Yeah, snap.
But I mean, I think a couple of people asked what that was about, but it wasn't meant in like a vicious way. It was just it was kind of just that song's kind of just a joke anyway. Like the lyrics are pretty funny.
Yeah, but I think it has stuck with people a lot over the years. And one thing that a kind of theme we've had talking to people, especially around that kind of UK alternative scene at that time on the podcast, is about a certain track that fans love. And it's become a cult classic, but never was really released as a single or anything like that. So one of our first guests was Aled Phillips and Kids in Glass Houses, and we talked about their track Sunshine. We had Sam McTrusty from Twin Atlantic on recently, and he was talking about their track Crash Land. And both of those are kind of seeing the way I look at the past six, these past 6 years, as being that kind of song for Death of Arna fans that maybe they have to find a little bit harder, because it's not just accompanied by a music video or with it being on Kerrang or Scuzz or anything like that. Is there any track from Falls that stand out like that for you, that you feel, oh, that is the song for Death of Arna fans that they own a little bit more than the casual listener?
I'm just getting out the track list. I can't fucking remember. I mean that one's pretty good for that purpose. Like, I would say if we're talking about a song that like sums us up, it would be Hunts Down and Pier, but we released that as a single. We had a video for it. Like, that was an obvious one. I think one that slips under the radar that no one really notices is the second track, Youth in Retrospect. Like, that's one of my favorite tracks off there. Just because I really like the lyrics, and I think if you get it, you get it. But I don't know. There's a few on there that... Sorry, did you ask one that, like, it wasn't obvious, but I think sort of...
Yeah, it was like a
quite
fan,
important.
I
don't know if it's a fan favorite, but the one that's called Things Change, Friends Leave, and Time... I can't remember what the fucking full title... Can't remember what the full title is, but it's the track before Leeches.
Yeah.
That's about Ryan. It wasn't our band. I don't know if anyone ever... Like, the lyrics to that, I think, are pretty good. Like, I just don't know if anyone... I don't even know if people... Because I don't know if people listen to albums, or maybe they did back then, but some of these songs, I reckon people haven't even properly listened to. But I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that feeling. But no, they're bound to have. People are obsessed with you. So there's no... People are fucking love it. Like, so, yeah.
Actually, one that we didn't release as a single but always got like a massive thing live was track 3, I Will Try. Like, people... Mm. I don't know why they latched onto that one. Maybe because it's got like a stupid chant at the beginning. But that one was big, and we never released that as a single.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, it's as I've mentioned, that it seems that there's so many tracks on this album that really had that connection with people as well. But what I found interesting was around that time, because it became such a busy period for you, and I think you kind of toured off this for quite a few years, and we'll get to some of the mad tours you got on it in just a little bit, but you actually went back and recorded a reimagined version of the album. Some of the tracks sound completely, obviously all sounding really completely different from another, that you wouldn't have thought they would have gone the other way. What was the mindset around that? Was it just because you'd played all these songs for so long at the time that you wanted to kind of give them a new lease of life? Or was there kind of that thought of, after having them in the bag for so long, that maybe there's other ways you could have done stuff?
Yeah, it was exactly that. For most people, when you record an album, you normally like played it live or in rehearsal. We hadn't. We'd never played those songs together. So I don't think we ever played any of those songs. Or maybe Little White Lies, actually, we played on a tour. I can't remember what it was called. It had a different name. But other than that, we had never played any of the songs before, I don't think. So as we released the album and as we were playing the songs, I was like, fuck, I wish I did that. So we just kind of, that was all it was. It was just because there's loads of, a song is just an idea, isn't it? There's so many different ways it could end up. So I just kind of wanted to explore some of the different ways that they could have ended up. And I actually prefer 90% of the alternative versions. Nah, not 90%. I don't know. 70%. Some of shit.
Yeah. Well, with our writing technique that you said, where you just like wrote it and recorded it without playing it, when it came to playing it then, or playing it live, was there any bits that were too complicated, or bits that you were like, I wish I'd made this easier?
Yeah, a lot. Not necessarily like, because we never really write anything techie or complicated. Excuse me, but a lot of them were too high. Like, I just couldn't sing them. Well, I could, but I couldn't sing them every night on tour for 2 weeks, 3 weeks. So like Little White Lies, we always play a step down. There's a few of them, but yeah, I actually think that was the main thing. Like, a lot of them were too high. Nemophobia, I can sing higher now than I could. There was a period between like age 23 and 28 where I just couldn't sing anything high. But then I don't know, maybe I just got a bit better. And now I can sing most of them again. But yeah, the main thing was always writing too high. But I'd been doing that before. Like, Friends Like These was fucking way too high. Everything, every chorus on that first album is too high. So it was just, like, if you were, by the end, we'd be on a tour and I'd like start, first night I'd try and sing him and it'd sound all right. Second night I'd try and sing him and it'd sound shit. Third night I'd just do a lower harmony. By the end of the tour, I was just, nah. Yeah. Sing him anymore. Just
doing the old
nothing.
Yeah, doing the old Jesse Lacey from Brand New Technique of just singing any fucking melody you want exactly. As long as the words
exactly.
Are right.
That's what I was doing.
Oh wow. Well, let's talk about the touring element from this record as well, because God, it was a mad busy time for you, and your life must have just been getting on and off the tour buses for around the kind of 2 years after that. And I had a little look earlier and you played with some fucking mad acts that really, when you think of it, just don't go together at that time as well. Because I believe you were doing tours with the likes of You, Me at Six and then Feeder, did some shows with Skindred and Architects, and then did your own headliners in between with support from like Dangerous Summer and having Canterbury on there and stuff with you as well. So like,
yeah,
that must have just been crazy, not only being on the road so much, but just playing in front of different audiences and all these bands.
Yeah, it was cool. It was weird. I liked it at the time because I didn't like being at home and I didn't really like my girlfriend at the time. Well, I did like her, but I was just bored. I'm a miserable cunt. And like, I just wanted to get drunk and be out all the time. So for me, it was cool. I was just like, yeah, put us on as many tours as you want. But, Skindred, I can't remember how the hell we got that. That was weird. Like, we went down, and it wasn't in England either. It wasn't in England where people are a bit more open-minded. It was in fucking Germany and Poland. They like one night we got bottles thrown at us. Like, it was so shit. They're lovely guys, and I had a cool time. It was one of the first like weird place. Like, we went to like Slovakia and like some strange places.
Oh, wow.
So it was quite weird.
Was
I enjoyed it.
How was Slovakia?
Slovakia was one of the best shows because I feel like nothing goes through there. So they were just waiting for...
Yeah, for sure.
There was only like... Yeah. There wasn't many people there, but they were like... They were nice to us and came up afterwards and like bought a t-shirt and shit. It was that. Those shit places are the best ones on tours like that. But in Germany, Skindred are quite big. Well, they are quite big still. They were quite big. So it was like... No one gave a fuck about us. And they did give a fuck about us, but it was negative. They were like actively telling us we were shit.
They give the wrong fuck. They
exactly.
give the wrong.
The wrong way. But yeah, they were like, come up to us at the, like, we'd play a show, try not to kill ourselves, and then go to the bar and just get drunk. And people were just, you know how honest Germans are. They just come up to us at the end and be like, you were pretty shit, yeah? Like, yeah. If you say so, mate.
Yeah. Listen to me. I enjoyed the fact that you were a performer, but your music, it makes me want to end my life. Oh, cheers. Thank you very much, you crazy German. Yeah. What I found in Germany is the majority of them, they like either weird metal and new metal, right?
Yeah.
So, like, Skindred, awesome, massive over there, new metal, or weird punk and ska. And that seems to be... You've got to try and fit somewhere in there. Otherwise,
Or David Hasselhoff.
Or David Hasselhoff.
Or David
obviously.
Hasselhoff. So yes, like fairly polished singing miserable lyrics with good harmonies is not what they...
No, they're not.
That's not what they want.
An acoustic guitar? Get that out of here.
Yeah,
we need a full electric right now. Give me a 0-1 riff or I'm going, or das ist nicht
exactly.
good and I'm going home.
But yeah, that was fucking weird. Architects tour we got just because we were mates with them and it was like, they just like, they liked our music. And
but
I think
imagine,
they just, no, I wasn't
going
to say anything important.
I was going to say, I'd imagine the air crowd though is a bit more receptive though.
Yeah, that was actually fine.
Yeah, a German new metal crowd is just German new metal.
Oh yeah, totally, exactly. But yeah, that was actually pretty good because it was us, and then it was another guy called Howard, who is Tech One. Remember them?
Yeah.
It was us, Tech One, Architects, and Architects had just released that record, The Here and Now, which is like mainly singing anyway. So it was actually it was pretty fun, and like they're really good friends of ours. So it was good laugh. I enjoyed it.
Was there any moments on that album cycle where you got to play with somebody that you never thought you would? Or do you remember a moment where you're like, what the fuck? How the fuck is this happening?
I can't remember what the London headline show was, but like the London headline show on the tour after that, I was kind of like, when did people start caring? It was only probably like 600 people, but I was still like, what the fuck? Why are they here to see us? That was mental. Just playing with anyone, really. I'm trying to think. We didn't actually tour with any bands that I was like starstruck by, but I think we might have played festivals with them, but I struggle. It all blurs into one, man. Actually, we did get Reading after that record, and I wrote that lyric. We got opening main stage Reading. That was fucking mental. That was mental for me. That was like, I couldn't believe it. That was like now. Unfortunately, with age and experience, you just get numb to it, which sucks because I'm just like, who cares? I'm not, I appreciate it, but it's back then it was just like, how is this happening? So yeah, I think Reading and Leeds was massive for me. And there must've been a bunch of other festivals and stuff like Sonosphere Festival we played back in the day. Fuck off. There was loads of like, loads of metal attack bands that I loved. Oh man.
Yeah. Do you remember a time when, somebody in a band you liked complimented the band and you were like, what the fuck? How the fuck do you even know about my band?
There's definitely been cases that I just can't remember. I mean, there's been weird stuff. Like I was, fuck me, one second. I got a bastard out.
So good.
Sorry about that. He's a fucking pain in the ass. I was on holiday in America with my girlfriend at the time. We were in like Louisiana at like a plantation house, as much as I know that's fucking weird, but there was a bar there. So I didn't go on the tour. I just went to the bar and the guy serving me was kind of cool. He had like tattoos, like talking to me, and he was like, oh, cool. What do you do? I was like, oh, I play in a band, blah, blah, blah. What do you do? He was like, oh, this, but my brother is a singer in Devil Driver. I was like, what? He was like, I'll text him and see if he's heard of you. And he texted his brother and he was like, yeah, they're fucking, the text back was like, yeah, they're fucking rad. Check out an album called Fools and Mothers Liars. That was weird.
Wow.
If only
you could have got that as a video clip, right? To have, is his name Dez or Fez? Is something like, I don't know.
I think Dez.
Yeah, if you could have had that as a video, you could have played that behind you with Skindred and won all the crowd over. Just legend.
I think it might have been post Skindred. But that was weird.
It's mad, isn't it? This is why I love doing this podcast, because we get moments like that where you could have said any other band in the world before Devil Driver then, and I would have gone, yeah, that makes sense. You said Devil Driver. Fucking mad.
Dude, like, this has been an ongoing thing. American metal bands, I've always bumped into them and they fucking love us. Like, we played Heavy Festival on this album cycle, actually, and Matty, or Real Bad, from These Nuts, was just like, bro, Fools and Mothers Liars is the best fucking record ever. You're in my head, man. I was like, what the fuck? Why do you like our band? There's like weird metal bands from, not weird, but like metal, but like fucking tough guy bands love our band for some reason. It's fucking weird.
Awesome.
Oh, wow. Fucking,
I love her.
Yeah, I kind of wish you had the Devil Driver text just as a fucking t-shirt or something. That would have sold so much.
Oh, no.
Well, yeah.
So long ago. I wish I can't even remember why I didn't get him to like, I obviously didn't have a camera phone, so I would have taken a photo of it.
Yeah. It's easier to do now, but God, yeah, absolutely incredible. But speaking of all those memories and stuff as well, I think like it's weird for me looking back 10 years ago to all these records and stuff coming back, because I was 15 at the time. So like I was as literally 2011, all these records from, you know, Death of Honor, Blackout.
You were 15.
I was 15. Yeah. When all these were coming out.
Yeah. It's mad, isn't it? How the fuck is he 45 now? How the fuck has he got 45 before us?
It's been a hard life. But when you look back at that, seeing it in particular, because as I said, there's so many kind of huge bands in alternative rock at that time. Like, it must have been so cool to be a part of, and especially now looking back and seeing that how many of you had these, how the albums all come out were very similar.
Yeah, it felt cool, but it also, I just always remember feeling like we weren't part of it. Like, a lot of the other bands had like little cliques, like they were like Umeå Six and Canterbury and Kiss and Garth, like they were all like mates, and we were just this band that just came in, played a show, either offended people or made them love us, and then fucked off again. So we were never really in like a, we were friends with some people, like we were friends with like We're the Ocean and stuff, but they, I think, were already starting to like stop being a band at that point. I can't remember exactly, but we were never really in a group with people. Cause even like our closest friends were probably Young Guns as we were like touring and stuff. And even they were like mates with all these American bands and stuff. And they had like a thing, whereas we were just us. You know what it was? I think there was no other band that drank as much as us and didn't. I just never met anyone that just didn't give a shit. Like we never, I don't mean that to, I'm not saying that to try and sound cool. There's nothing cool about it. But where we came from, we never expected to get past playing a village hall, you know? Like, so anything we did was like a bonus. We were just like, this is fucking great. So we never, ever took it seriously. We just liked playing music and we liked drinking and having a laugh. And we never had a plan. Like, I remember speaking to Josh from Umeå Six years ago, like when I first met him, and he always had an idea of where he wanted to be at a certain point. And I was like, mate, I'm just happy to be here now. If I'm alive in the morning when I wake up, fucking A, I'll keep going. But I just, and that was detrimental to us, I think. Although it was fun, and like I liked it because it made me feel a bit more like rock and roll than some of these fucking squares who, no, I'm joking. But it's so detrimental. It was really detrimental because like I never planned ahead. I never thought about any outcome other than I'm going to have a hangover tomorrow.
I think I was the same as you. Like, I saw these people who were like, all right, so within 9 months now, we're going to be doing this. And I was just like,
exactly.
We are playing a gig next week. We've spent all our fee on lights for a laugh. That was it. every show for us was like, how can I make this as good as I can? So it's like the last show you did is the best show you ever did. Do you know what I mean? So literally I think the blackout was kind of very similar to you in the vein of, just not forward thinking. I think that was detrimental to us in the end, like, because we ended up fucking hemorrhaging money on fucking production, just so everybody there was like, oh, the lights were nice, and we were like, yeah, but now we can't fucking eat. we better fucking give up. But it's weird that you say that you didn't think that you like fitted into a group, because I saw you kind of like you, Umeå Six, Young Guns, We Are the Ocean, Lower Than Atlantis, Architects. Like, I saw you as a bit of a gang. So it's mad to hear from you that you didn't feel like part of that. Like, I know we kind of had just the Welsh scene just because we ended up coming up with those people, like Kids, Lost Prophets, Funeral for a Friend or whatever. Yeah, it was just weird that you didn't see yourself as part of that scene, really.
Yeah, I mean, to me, like, we definitely had friends. Like, I remember feeling quite sort of like tight with Lone Atlantis back in the day, because they also didn't, I mean, I think deep down they cared, but like they gave off the impression they didn't care, and they were always up for getting fucked with us. And I mean, it's simple as that. Who wants to stay out and get drunk with us? That was who we were friends with. And like, but after a while, we did obviously get really close with Umeå Six, and they're good friends of ours. But I'm talking like back in the day, like around this album when we first came out, there was just no, we just weren't really part of like a, I just always felt kind of on my own. But I was cool with that. Like, I was friends with these people. I just didn't feel like, and also probably because we didn't come from anywhere. Umeå Six, all of them, they all came from close to London. Like, they all came from like either Surrey or Essex or whatever. It's basically London. You say you're from London. We came from fucking Norfolk. There's one road in and out. If you get stuck behind a tractor, you could be there for 3 hours. Like, it takes God knows how long to get in and out. It's in the middle of nowhere. So we just didn't have there's no one famous comes out of there. No other bands were from there. Like, there wasn't a scene. So I think we came in on our own and we just felt like, that was it, really.
Good that you show the people of fucking Norfolk that it can be done. No, you are the fucking inspiration that they can get out. If they can overtake the tractor quick enough, they can get out and tour the world.
Exactly.
Oh, wow. Well, James, just a few more things now as we start to wind down with this and everything. And just one question that everyone's going to be screaming at me if I don't ask this to you is, obviously there's a lot of popularity at the moment around bands celebrating these albums with anniversary tours and everything like that. Has that been something that's crossed your mind of maybe trying to celebrate this somehow with a few live performances, playing it in full or anything like that?
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I don't think it's going to happen. We did think about it. We were going to do a live stream of the album as a part of a bunch of live streams, but I don't think live streams... People are starting to play shows again now, so they're kind of obsolete again. So, I mean, this might be the only celebration of that, so...
What?
But no, I don't know. We thought about it. We did think about it. Yeah. We talked about it. But I just don't think... It's just... I don't know. There's, like, we're in a period of inactivity and we haven't really... It would be weird to just come out of nowhere. And it might not be weird for people that like our band. It might seem appropriate. But for us as individuals and as, like, humans... It would be weird to go from doing nothing to just doing that, I think. So, yeah,
I don't know. I reckon you could fucking knock out a good acoustic live stream or something and just fucking have a laugh and just reminisce about the old days.
You just go out on an acoustic guitar by yourself, some venues, and just tell some stories in between. All the feels straight to you.
I'm keen. If you can organise that.
I was just about to write down 20% booking agent. Nice.
We'll have a look at some
venue, Sean. Let's get on it.
Sapling presents. I fucking love it.
There you go.
We're on this.
Yeah, started something. But with all that as well, obviously, as you said, you've been very quiet as of late and stuff, and I'm sure there's going to be some things in the future for people to keep an eye out for. So is it just at the moment just keep following the social media pages and seeing what happens?
Yeah, definitely keep an eye out. Like, there's definitely stuff coming. I've been busy, which is good, and I'm excited, but we haven't really. I mean, you'll see. Just keep an eye out.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear it. I reckon it's going to be a mix. It's going to be a mix between new metal and weird ska, so you can get them fucking German fans. Fucking big country, Germany. Yeah, you only need to be big in Germany, and you're fucking sorted for life. Look, so
that's all jokes aside. That is like our second best territory, and we might try and make it our first best territory.
Yeah.
If you get on German radio, you fucking the PRS you get from that is pretty good.
Nice.
That's it then. Yeah. So the next Effavana record. Is going to be in German, so that'll be interesting. Because I didn't even know you could speak a bit of Deutschlandish, that's wrong.
Deutschland. Oh, wow. Yeah. But yeah, but it's been an absolute pleasure, man. Thank you so much for coming on and kind of looking back at this record. I think a lot of people are going to be very happy with some of these stories and everything. So yeah, looking forward to what happens next. And I'm sure we'll have you back on pretty soon to dive into something else.
Please. Well, yeah, this has been a real, real treat, and a fucking I just love seeing your face, to be honest. So we could have done this.
Same without, goes for you, boys.
We could have done this without sound, and I'd just been smiling all the way through. But thank you so much for this, and
I guess pleasure.
I've probably never said it, but thank you for the music, thank you for the inspiration.
You're very welcome.
You're a fucking legend. I'm glad you're alive. I'm glad you're doing well, and I'm fucking over the moon for you, and I cannot wait for what's fucking next. So thank you very much for coming on, bud. I really
thank you very much. Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me again, guys.
You're listening to Sapin Podcast.
Yay!
Absolutely chuffed to have James on, to see him doing well, and to hear all those stories. And it's 10 years, like 10 years. It doesn't feel like it. It feels like about 2. But here we are, all older and not wiser, apart from James.
Well, how do you think it makes me feel? I was literally a little kid when that album came out. I remember the hype behind it and everything. But I feel very honoured him taking the time out to come on as well, because as you mentioned, Death of Honor haven't really been active as of late. They've been very quiet on social media and just in general. So for him to come on, talk to us and give us the down low on a really important album to so many people and just what's going on as well is I appreciate it a lot. So thank you, James, for taking the time. He also told us some very sneaky secrets of things coming very soon. So yes, keep an eye out for everything. And
by told, you mean sent.
What?
But you're going to laugh, you're going to cry, you're going to dance, you're going to fucking be sad, you're going to love it.
Yes, you will. Whenever that comes out, you'll know.
Whatever it is. It could be a film.
Whatever. I don't know what you're on about, but
I can't believe he's doing porn. Oh,
fuck's sake.
I've said too much.
On everything going on for Death of Honor. But I really enjoyed as well how open he was about being sober. And that is such an incredible thing to talk about with James. If you've listened to our previous episode with him, episode 17, there's a lot of stories about drunken activities he'd gone up to and things on tour buses and being stuck in a bin bag.
The standard.
So it's nice to see he's taken that positive change in his life as well.
Oh, it's absolutely means the fuck. Like, it doesn't, like, it shouldn't matter. Like, from his perspective, what I feel doesn't matter. But to me, I am fucking chuffed to bits. Absolutely chuffed to bits that he's fucking 7 months sober now. Because there was a time when me and I guess a lot of people around him would have thought that was fucking impossible, because I remember one year, I think it was probably like 2013, 2014, we were at Reading Festival. It was me, James, and Josh Franceschi from UMIA6 doing an interview for Kerrang! Magazine for the cover. And we sat in, I think it was UMIA6's dressing room and talked for like over an hour and a half with Kerrang! And 45 minutes of it was James telling stories, and we were laughing, and we were like, it got to about 45 minutes in and I realized, oh, we're just laughing and all these stories are. I was drunk, would start with, I was drunk. So yeah, I'm glad he's sober. He looks better for it. He sounds better for it. And yeah, I'm just chuffed for him. So yeah, congratulations, James. Fucking keep going. If anybody else is struggling with anything like that, reach out, speak to people. Like James said, he's gone to AA and they've helped him massively. So yeah, if you've got any problems like that and you're thinking about reaching out, do it. Do it now. Do it. Come on.
But there's more support there than you know, and obviously you're not alone in these things. Just taking that step, but I'm sure it's worth it every single step of the way, really. But It's nice to get to do these kind of retrospect album celebration episodes as well. And hopefully we'll be doing a lot more like these in the next few months to come. Obviously, we've already done episodes with The Blackout, Sean, where we revisited Ooh. Hope and we revisited The Best in Town. So you can go back and listen to that. And if you are just a fan of that time of music and the alternative UK scene from the early 2010s, we have plenty of episodes for you to dive back into from everyone from Twin Atlantic to We Are the Ocean, Kids in Glass Houses, Canterbury, You, Me at Six, Funeral for a Friend. It's all there. Go and check them out or let us know some guests you would like us to talk to in the near future at Sapnin Pod on the Twitter and Instagram machines.
Yes, and also, if you've enjoyed two or more episodes of this, you are legally obliged to join our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/sapnin, because I've just found out off Boris Johnson, he emailed me this morning to say that anybody who's listened and enjoyed more than two episodes has to join our Patreon or they're going to be jailed. Now, not my words, don't shoot the messenger. That was Boris, that was Conservative MP and Prime Minister Boris Johnson saying, you have to join our Patreon.
I'm surprised he found the time to send you an email considering he's falling asleep in public places all the time when he should be wearing a mask as well, but he's not.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he wasn't sleeping. He was just looking down at his text. He was texting me saying, look, tell the general public. Morgan, what I'm really doing is, because the people who support the Conservative government are so gullible and believe the things he actually says, right?
Yeah.
What I'm doing is, I'm just putting it out now so the general public, some of them fell for the bus lies. So I'm thinking that if I do this bit, I say Boris Johnson said it, they'll just do it. So yeah, patreon.com/sapnin. Boris Johnson said you've got to do it. There's loads of stuff there behind the scenes, videos, photos. There's other podcasts that we've done now, we've put up there rather than on our wall. And you get to become part of our absolutely fucking wonderful community. So yes, patreon.com. I've forgotten how to speak. patreon.com/sapnin.
Yes, head over there. Loads of people are meeting up this weekend to go to gigs in the London. I believe they're seeing Hold and Absence and Don Broco and all that. So come and join the party. Come and meet some new friends and have a great time. But while we're thanking our amazing Patreon community, there's loads of names in the description that we need to give a shout out for. So go over there, have a little look. And as always, Sean is going to give a mahoosive shout out on the podcast to the elite members of our Sapnin Podcast Patreon community. Those are the top tiers. Who have we got, Ben?
Oh, they've all gone this week.
We're fucked, Ben.
Oh yeah, this is literally the last podcast, I think.
So patreon.com/sapnin.
Yeah, so please, as quick as you can, go to Patreon. If you're listening to this now, pause this, patreon.com/sapnin. Go sign up, pause this, because we haven't got any elite members, right? Right, now that they're back, let's give a shout out to the elite members, this will fucking teach them. We've just had more people sign up. Anyway, thank you very much. Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi Liwaway, Janelle Caston, Amandine Urbano, Mitch Perry, Dilly Grimwood, Kelly Ewan, Natasha Morris, Nathan Croshaw, Paul Hirschfield, Emma Barber, Sammy G, Tony Michael, Kat Besant, Captain Hannibal, Dana Lasnova, Jenny Robinson, Murray Grimwood, Scott Jones, Amy Campion, Johnny Phillips, Mikey McDonald's McMuffin Buns, Caroline Robinson, Chris Howard, Louis Cook, Martina McManus, Kevin Clark, Danny Eaton, Carl Pendlebury, Lydia Henderson, Craig Harris, James McNaught, Jenny Sexy Boy Munster, Jason Heredia, Lucy Diaz, John and Emma, Emily Perry, Stuart McNaught, Becky Handy, Kelly Cannon, Adam King of the Goths Parslow, Ollie Amesbury, Josh Sad News, My Obese Parrot Died Today. Mind you, it's a huge weight off my shoulders, Chris.
I like that. Okay, I like that one. That was good.
That's a good one. That was Josh. Well done. Alice Wood, Katrina Robinson, Kieran Allen, Rhys Bowring, Ben Evans, Kate Stevenson, Connor Lewins, and the mighty Livy Cropper.
Yes.
Thank you very much, guys.
Every single person to help us continue to make these bloody podcasts. It means the absolute world. And that's patreon.com/sapnin. Again, if you need another reminder, to help us out. Before we head off, Sean, I'd like to give a quick plug to this band I've been listening to lately.
I was just about to say, before you go any further, shut the fuck up. There's a Raiders video out. That's what I was going
to
say.
What? That's the band I've been listening to. There's a video.
Thank God for that. I thought you were going to say, for a brief second, and I thought, well, he's got to be mentioning Raiders now, haven't he? Yeah. Then I started up it, and I was like, hey, maybe he's not. But yes, my new band, my latest band, Raiders, have a video out now called Animal. Rock Sound premiered it the other day and wrote a lovely article on it. Please check it out. Search for Raiders Band UK on YouTube, I guess, or any of that shit. And the song Animal, the video's out now. If you don't like me, number one, what are you doing listening to this? But number two, go check out the video because I get shot in it. And that's exciting, hey. Isn't it? So, and the guy who shoots me is a real fucking prick. So check that out. Yeah.
Oh,
the
be?
Guy who shoots me is from a band you might remember from about 10 years ago. That's all I'm gonna say. Check it out. Raiders Animal. Also, November the 12th, I'm making my live comedy event debut in Cardiff because I'm doing a comedy arcade podcast live where so basically the premise is it's like a panel show. It'll be me and four actual comedians. And Vix does like a bingo ball thing, and then she comes out with a number where she has a list of things, and the numbers are categories to talk about. So, yes, come on down. Chapter Arts in Cardiff, November the 12th, Comedy Arcade Podcast. Should be a laugh. I'm going to try my best to be funny.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, good luck with that. I'm sure you'll nail it. I don't have anything else to plug, but I'll say if you want to follow me on Instagram and Twitter at @mhrichards_, for some reason you can.
Don't follow him.
I posted a photo of me in a pumpkin the other day and I look very happy. So if you want a quick laugh at that,
I did.
Check
you know
out.
I saw that the day after. I don't know why he didn't come in my feed that day. Oh. But I remember seeing it the day after going, I wonder if he's mad at me for not liking it soon. Because he beats me, guys, when I'm, if I don't like his social media posts instantly, he texts me and goes, the fuck do you think you're up to? Anyway, this has been episode 154 of Sapnin, featured the beautiful James Vecalodi of Deaf Havana. It's also featured Morgan Richards and myself, Sean Smith. We will see you next week. If people join the Patreon, if not, ta-da.
Yeah, pretty much.
Sapnin!
Cool. Sapnin!
It's a weird ascending yet.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.